B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Simulcast, NBC Sports Boston. Felger and Mass brought to you by DraftKings. And it being the 4 o'clock hour on a Friday, we're joined by Chris Gasper of WCVB TV Channel 5. By the way, no Mike and Tony today. They are out on vacation. It's summertime. This tends to happen, especially on an agenda-free Friday. So you have Jim Murray and Christian Arcand again, joined by Chris Gasper, powered by the commuter rail. If you take the train for your daily commute but aren't going in every day, you need the new 5-day Flex Pass. It gets you 5 discounted 1-day tickets, each good for 24-hour unlimited travel. Learn more at mbta.com/fares. That's mbta.com/fares and get the 5-day Flex Pass right now. It's available on the M-Ticket app. Hey, Chris, hi.
Hey, what's going on? How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Pretty well.
This is the first time I've been in the studio with this plexiglass.
Yeah, it's like working at a bank.
It's really interesting.
And you're dressed like you work at a fancy bank.
Yes, I guess I am.
Where do you want to start? I mean, Bill Belichick was just talking for the first time via Zoom. He seemed comfortable. He seemed human. He actually seemed, I don't know, personable in a way. I actually liked how he answered the thing about the opt-outs. Well, actually, let's start there. Two-part question. First, were you surprised that there were that many opt-outs? You had 6 in basically a 24-hour period. You had names, like big, especially Dante Hightower is a big national name. That's just not a regional thing. Surprised by that many? You think there's anything behind it? And what did you make of Belichick's answer?
I was surprised that they had that many. I didn't think they would have that many. When you look at the circumstances individually, I think it makes a lot of sense. But I just wasn't expecting the Patriots to have 6 guys. I don't think it's part of some master plan. I know we like to ascribe that all the time, that it's all part of some master plan. You know, sometimes things just happen. And I think when Belichick was talking about this today, he talked about it's an individual decision for each guy. No two guys are the same. So I don't think it's part of some. I just can't imagine there's some master plan where he doesn't have Dante Hightower in a year where you're looking at Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins not being on the team and they're thin at linebacker. Where's the master plan in that? I don't get it.
Yeah, no, there isn't. Like that's I think more of a national standpoint. Like this is a conspiracy to try to tank for a quarterback, whether it's Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, whoever. I don't think it's anything like that. I think it's just as simple as we're living in a crazy, unprecedented time. You have guys that have loved ones at home or young or baby at home. They don't want to bring COVID home to. Marcus Cannon's case, he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma a decade ago. Like it can just be as simple as what it is. I also do think if there is something else that helped push them to that decision, though, I do think that there could be something to the Patriots are victims of their own success in that guys like Cannon, Chung, Hightower, they've been here this whole time, won multiple championships. What else is there really to accomplish? If you think this is a weird year or you're afraid of the virus, you have the opportunity to opt out, even though you might have a little bit of a money concern. You might not be able to get, you know, in Hightower's case, $8 million again, guaranteed, but oh, the hell with it. I've already done what I needed to do. I'm going to sit this one out.
Yeah, I do think there's something to that. I think it's more that than, say, missing Tom Brady or feeling like we don't have as good a chance to win without Tom Brady. It's the idea that these are guys that have already won a Super Bowl. And I think that does, even if it's just on a subconscious level, I don't think that's why they're opting out. I think they're opting out because they're concerned about their families. They're concerned about their health. But if there's any hesitation there, I think it's a lot easier if you've been on teams that have won a Super Bowl. You've already reached the pinnacle of your profession. You've done it. So I think even on a subconscious level, that makes it easier. You're more at peace with the decision than maybe somebody else who's, you know, chasing a championship. If there's somebody towards the end of their career who's never, let's say you're LeSean McCoy, you know, technically he got a ring last year with Kansas City, but he didn't play in the Super Bowl. But somebody of that ilk who's never won, and all of a sudden, you know, or Jason Witten, you want to play. It's like, this is your chance to win a Super Bowl. That's tough. That's a little bit harder decision, I think.
What else stood out to you in Belichick's little presser that he did there? That he loves sandwiches?
I would say two things stood out. One, the way he ended it, I don't know if you guys were still listening, but he told everybody to stay safe and stay healthy. It was very, very human, the way that he ended it. So it seems like this time has had some sort of effect on him in some way, at least in terms of the public face of Bill Belichick. I think he's maybe softened that a little bit. We'll see how long that lasts, but I thought it was a noticeable difference. And, you know, look, if you've ever talked to Bill sort of behind the scenes, like what you see at the podium is it's not a what you see is what you get. There's an affectation there that he puts up for his own reasons in terms of controlling the flow of information. He's not really that stolid like all the time. The other thing is I think he is hell-bent on trying to get the most out of Stidham and Newton in this camp. And even though I think it's Newton's job, and I've been told it's basically Newton's job, this went exactly the way that I was told it would go, which is that Bill's going to say it's a competition. He's going to highlight the competition. He actually was sort of saying, well, it's just like any other position. You know, we have to compete. And he really wanted to make sure that in no way, shape, or form did he anoint Cam Newton the starter. I thought that was the number one thing that stood out to me, is that he's going into this like, oh, this is a competition. Do I think it is? I don't. But I think that he wants to do that because he wants to see how Newton responds, and he thinks it's going to help Stidham in the long run if Stidham believes this thing is really open and that he can take the job.
Christian?
Well, I was sort of wondering what you thought about the idea that, you know, if Cam Newton, obviously, I mean, I think we all know that Bill wants to treat it like a competition, but... Yeah. You know, there was that whole thing with the Patriots and their Twitter account and that video that they posted and everything like that. I don't know, that's a question for Bill. But I do feel like Bill probably has a bit more interest in what they're doing over there on the video side these days after what happened in Cleveland. Like, yeah, could that maybe be something that was part of all this? Do you think there was any hints to that or no?
I mean, not from Bill, but I mean, organizationally, I think, yeah, Cam Newton it's much easier to sell Cam Newton. Cam Newton is an out-of-the-box, ready-made franchise frontman for you in a year where you lost Tom Brady. The crown jewel of Patriot Place, as somebody over there once said to me. So when you look at that, yeah, that makes sense, and the marketing people will do that. At the end of the day, Bill's going to make the best decision from a football standpoint. And if Stidham suddenly comes out and looks like Aaron Rodgers, then you know what will happen? Yeah, Cam Newton will get Wally Pipped. Or Wally Pipps, as Bill once said to Wes Welker on the sideline when Edelman against that preseason game against Philadelphia. You ever heard of Wally Pipps? So that will happen. But I think the way they're going into this, Cam Newton's the guy. He's a proven NFL quarterback in an offseason where you didn't really have an offseason. You don't know what Stidham is, how much he's improved. He didn't get those really, really important, meaningful reps. I think it's Newton's job. And unless Newton plays really poorly, here's the other thing, guys. Let's say it's really close. Let's say Stidham even gets him by a nose. I'd still start the season with Newton because it's much easier to go Newton to Stidham than Stidham to Newton. Newton is nobody's backup.
Looking at it from just a personnel standpoint with these opt-outs, do you feel any differently about the team? Like I didn't really like the linebacker depth that they had even with Dante Hightower. And so now he's out. Juwan Bentley ostensibly will be the green dot in the middle. He's done it before when Hightower's been hurt, but... I mean, look at it. It's rookies and question marks or just like guys off the street that, you know, they've turned into okay players like John Simon.
Yep.
I just, they feel real thin to me there. So I don't know. Like, look, these Hightowers, I don't know if they were going to be 9-7 and they're now 8-8, or if they're going to be 10-6, they're going to be now 9-7 that they've lost these guys.
To me, Hightower is the single biggest loss outside of Brady.
Wow.
I mean, that's huge to lose that guy. How clutch is he? He's a guy that is a leader, defensive play caller, and you were already weak at that position. Now you take him out. I that defense was great last year, not so great down the stretch, but they were great last year. And I know everybody wanted to ascribe it to the secondary, like that was the strength of the defense. And how could you not with a guy like Stephon Gilmore? I actually thought the strength of the defense was the linebackers. Hightower, Van Noy, Collins, all those guys are gone. And going into this year, I thought even with Van Noy and Collins gone, that this team's identity would be defense first. Now I'm not so sure. I still think the defense is better than the offense, but I don't think it's a clear-cut identity of, well, look at this shutdown defense, because who's going to be playing linebacker? That is a huge question mark, and I feel like we could roll this back, and you could be in a situation, you're going to love this, Jim. This could be like a 2008, 2009, where it's like, look at this guy we found, Gary Guyton. Like, I think it's going to be like one of those where it's like, again, do they really have what they need? No, but this is the best guy they have at the time, so... what's the guy's name? Cash Maialua and Scooter Harris, those guys who were undrafted free agents. Suddenly you're going to start, mark my words, those guys are going to get talked up like you wouldn't believe.
Or taking it back even further, Monty Beisel, Chad Brown. Like you're like, huh? What the hell? I thought it was thin anyway. I don't feel great about that. I still think it's the AFC East. You're surrounded by crap. I don't really believe in the Bills all that much because of their suck quarterback. Like, if Cam Newton's okay, they'll still find a way, I think, to compete or win the division. But, I don't know, they definitely take a hit. I mean, those aren't just roster filler that they lost this week with this opt-outs. Do you think there's any more coming? Because these guys, the league has until Monday, right? The players have until Monday.
Well, I think, you know, they haven't officially signed the agreement. So the last I saw was that they've actually bumped that back to, what, Wednesday?
Oh, okay.
Because it's supposed to be, I think, 5 days from when they sign it. I don't know if they've officially signed the NFL and the NFLPA. The last I had seen it was actually going to be Wednesday. It's a great question. You know, I don't know. You've heard the McCourties talk about their concerns, but they also have the opportunity to play with each other again. I haven't heard anything. I think they're going to play. That's just my opinion. It's not based on any speculation. But if they were to opt out, would I be stunned? No, honestly, I wouldn't. I think that there are guys that have accomplished a lot, that have family situations, who are later in their career. And if any of these guys are paying attention to what's happening in MLB, how can you really have a tremendous amount of faith and trust in the idea that whatever protocols your league puts in place are ironclad and will prevent you from getting COVID?
Yeah, I want to get to that next because that was my opening take today. You know, you have more positive tests today in Major League Baseball, more games that have been postponed, and I hope the NFL is watching because that's the one sport I care about the most. The NFL better be watching, and they should be considering a bubble. So we'll get to that. The Celtics return tonight. The NBA returned last night. Everything from the week. Your Red Sox, you know, they're being better, Chris, over the last couple of games. We'll get to all that coming up with Chris Casper here on Felger and Mazz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go, on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Who doesn't know Felger and Mazz?
Michael Felger, I don't know from a can of paint at all.
Felger and Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I think they've handled it well, to be honest with you, in that they've done virtually everything that you could do to try to get the main goal was to protect the health and the welfare of the players and of the personnel associated with the team.
Felger and Mazz, Agenda Free Friday. Driven by the Bernardi Auto Group, 98.5 Sports Hub simulcast, NBC Sports Boston, Jim Murray and Christian Arcand in for Mike and Tony today, joined by Chris Casper, as he normally is in on the 4 o'clock hour on a Friday. That was Dr. Anthony Fauci on how Major League Baseball has handled the outbreak with the Marlins. You now have close to 20 players and staffers that have tested positive with the Miami Marlins. They have been shut down until further notice. Brewers-Cardinals game tonight, that's been postponed. Cardinals had a couple of positive tests today. Phillies have a coach and a staffer test positive.
Yeah, so they're shut down through Sunday.
Yeah, they're shut down. It's all a mess, Chris. I opened the show today to say that you know, Major League Baseball's coronavirus problem, it's spreading quickly. And the thing that matters the most to me is that I hope the NFL is watching. Like, is the NFL ready? Is there a plan? What the hell is it? You know, you can lose a safety, a tackle. Yeah, whatever. Like, ahead of a game, you got to shut them down for a couple of weeks, quarantine. That's fine. But if you lost a quarterback, Brady goes down, Cam Newton goes down to this, like, you know, the product is clearly going to suffer. So they have to have a plan here. I just wonder, do you think the NFL should be looking at what's going on with Major League Baseball in their first week back and pivot and consider a bubble?
I don't, because I don't think you can do a bubble with the NFL. I think it's too late in the game at this point. Here's what I would say. They should look at it. They should try and learn from it where they can. And I think the biggest thing is, here's the biggest advantage the NFL has. It's one game a week for each team. And so you need to create the week and point the week from a testing and from a contact tracing standpoint towards that game, so that before you kick off, you have the most up-to-date information possible to prevent any sort of outbreak. I think that's the advantage the NFL has, is that they can shape their protocol, they can shape their testing, everything towards making sure that when it's Sunday or it's Monday night for one team or Thursday night for another team, that they have the most up-to-date information in terms of testing and what's going on. I think a little bit of a lag with MLB and all the games they're trying to jam in. And I blame MLB in this regard. If they had done a better job, I think, Jim and Christian, of negotiating with the players, they would have left themselves more pad time. And if you have a situation like this, you could shut down a team, or you could even shut down the league for a little bit and still squeeze in your games. But because they went back and forth, couldn't get anything done and wanted to jam in 60 games, now they're at a point where their margin for error is very slim in terms of moving. And now they have like the season to me is just an absolute joke. And I can talk about that, you know, later in terms of what they're doing with these 7-inning doubleheaders. But to go back to your point with the NFL, it's too late in the game for a bubble. I think you just have to make sure that all your protocols are pointing towards, before you intermix two teams, you have isolated all the players you need to isolate, and that you know who's out there. You know that the people that are out there are not a danger. They're not contagious.
What's it really come down to? Is it just the personal responsibility of the players in their respective sports? Is that why you think it's spreading? I mean, there's some, not speculative reports, like it's pretty much known that, like, what happened with the Marlins case, they had a couple of scrimmage games in Atlanta against the Braves before the regular season really started.
They hit up some of your old haunts?
Yeah, they were out in those streets. Yeah. A couple of guys got it, and that's how it spread. Is it just really that simple? Like, hey, guys, can you actually do the right thing so we can get through our respective seasons?
It's probably not that simple, but it would help a lot. To me, it's kind of like the mask issue, right? You know, are masks like 100% foolproof? No. But if you do it, you really lower the risk of transmission. It's the same thing. Hey, is it 100% foolproof if you just stay in your hotel room? No, but it's a much better chance than if you go out to the Gold Club in Atlanta, you know, and get a lap dance. So I just think that if guys can sort of use common sense, they'll be a lot better off. But that's one of the issues with MLB. There's more travel than in the NFL. There's more games. There's a lot of downtime. You know, it's not like there's downtime before games. The NFL, I think what will work for them is that, look, obviously guys go out and party in the NFL. We all know. I mean, look at Lawrence Taylor. But you're there in the building longer. It's a more regimented schedule. I think that will work in the NFL's favor. And then on game day, like, the focus is really the game because it's the only one you're playing that week, you know, for the most part. Whereas with MLB, there's just so much ancillary stuff going on, and you're in this town, you're in that town, you have all this downtime. I just think it's easier for guys to go astray.
Mary in Florida on this topic, go ahead. You're next here on an Agenda Free Friday on Felger and Mass.
Hi guys, listen, I'm just a little bit worried, and maybe I'm just a worrywart, but these are very large men in the football league. Is anybody worried about complications if they do get COVID? Because from what I understand, I mean, your size has something to do with how sick you can get. I'll just stop and listen. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Mary. I mean, maybe that factors in for someone like Marcus Cannon, right? Like
offensive lineman. Yeah. They're all like 6 foot, 370 pounds. Like, they're all technically obese. They're in good shape. I mean, it's not like they're big, you know, but they're in great shape. But it's not like they're not. I mean, they're huge, huge people. And yeah, I feel like that has to factor in. I was wondering, actually, if guys who are a certain height and weight would get the 350 just based on the fact that that's how big they are. Like, does that automatically put them at higher risk?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. The way the NFL drew it up, probably not, Christian. I think a normal physician would say yeah, but for the NFL rules, I'm sure that's probably not the case. Otherwise, it would be a real issue. But I think it's very funny that when you look at this, like, someone wrote a story fairly recently of all these linemen who've lost like a ton of weight after they've done in the NFL, and it's not a healthy lifestyle, and it's not natural to begin with to weigh that much.
Well, but look at, Jeff Saturday,
yeah,
now works for ESPN. It looks like a completely different dude. There's another lineman, too. He's now become like he's like on the U.S. swim team, or he's like a coach on the U.S. swim team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, like, what are they pumping these guys full of?
I mean, some of these guys like have like six packs. You wouldn't even recognize them. I can't remember who wrote the story. I think it was on ESPN, but you're looking at that and you're like, that's that guy? It was a guy from the Carolina Panthers. Like, one guy's running like ultra marathons. They don't even look like the same people.
Yeah. So going back to it was Joe Thomas. That's who I was thinking of. It was the former left tackle of the Cleveland Browns, who used to be a moose. He's now like a professional swimmer. I think he's a coach for the U.S. swim team or something like that. But he's in phenomenal shape, like the swimmer's shape, which is, I think, what we could all aspire to be.
Oh, totally.
If I actually wanted to put in the effort, which I won't. Chris, okay, so while baseball's kind of screwing up the whole coronavirus thing and how they're handling that, you just don't like you don't like the 7-inning double.
No, I don't like any of this. The season is a joke. It's a joke. I mean, look.
This is the time to test stuff and do new stuff with that horrible product.
Okay, I understand that, and I'll address that with this. I don't think they're introducing all this gimmickry, and to me, they're still not addressing the root problem. If I could have one rule instituted this year, you know what it'd be? The pitch clock. Like, just, you know, speed it up. That's the biggest issue. Speeding it up, getting the players to perform faster, not dragging their feet. And there's nothing in here that's really going to do anything for that. Why don't they address, it's all window dressing, and they're not addressing the root issue. And I think they're sort of perverting the game. 60-game season. All right, I don't love it. I know you have to jam it in because of coronavirus, but I don't like having a 16-team playoff. I mean, part of the charm of baseball is that it really means something to get into the playoffs. Now more than half the teams make it. I don't like that. I don't like this stupid rule where you're starting extra innings with a guy in scoring position. That's a gimmick. I don't like that. I don't like them playing seven-inning doubleheaders. I think that's stupid, too. They've completely perverted their sport. I think this season is an absolute joke.
I'm with you on the expanded playoffs. I hate that. The one thing I did really still like about baseball, that there was exclusivity, I think, to their to their playoffs. Wow, what is that?
Oh, that's major
base. What has happened here? It's like we've all decided to take acid now. This is still coming through the airwaves. Wow.
That was wild.
Interesting. Yeah, that was that was
a Skrillex concert.
Yeah. that was cool.
Drop the bass on Felger and Maz. Shake that ass. Here we go.
DJ Alexi to my left.
Yeah, right.
Crank it up. Where was I? Yeah, with you on the expanded playoffs. Hate that. Don't want to see suck teams coming in and watering that down. But the rest of it, Chris, like, this is the time. So, fine. Put in the pitch clock, too. This is the time to try new
stuff. That's the thing I want the most. Okay, that's fine. But the root issue is not, it's not like, you know, we want the games to be shorter, but it's not like all these gimmicks of, okay, so we're only going to play seven innings, or we're going to put this guy on second base. You can solve this problem and maintain the integrity of the sport, maintain the integrity of the game, if you just get these guys to speed it up. The reason the games are so long is that it's just a cavalcade of relievers, all of them taking forever to throw a pitch. I told you, I covered one of those Red Sox intra-squad games, and I won't name the pitcher, but one of the Red Sox relievers, a guy that they use who's effective, came on in an intra-squad scrimmage, and it was like, oh my God, I could time this guy with a sundial. Like, throw the ball. You know, they have to find a way to change the culture and speed these guys up, because that's really what it's about. And there's no rules in there that are doing that. So address that problem and then experiment with this other stuff. I also think that just for one season, it's too much. It's 60 games. It's, you know, the one rule I do like, I will say, is the universal DH. I do like that. So I will say that. But it's 60 games. It's universal DH. It's seven-inning doubleheaders. It's starting extra inning games with guys on second base. It's 16 teams making the playoffs. It's too much without addressing the root issue.
All right, I want to get to some of your thoughts on your local nine. They've been being better the last couple of games with some wins in New York against the Mets.
Christian Arcan and the Be Better Boys talking some baseball.
They
right?
start up a series against the Yankees tonight, so I want to know if they get a little bit of wind in their sails, in your opinion, and how the Celtics are going to fare as they return tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks. You want to join the show and talk to Chris Gasper, 617-779-0985, here on Agenda Free Friday, and Felger and Maz will get to all that right after the Sports Up headlines here with Christian Arcan.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You listen sometimes because you agree.
I agree with Matt.
And sometimes because deep down you like the pain.
Pulling each other's shirts off and licking each other's faces.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
2-2. And he got him! And the Red Sox win it. Back-to-back nights at Brandon Workman closes out the Mets. And the Red Sox come to New York and win both.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Felger Maz brought to you by DraftKings. It's an agenda-free Friday driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. It's Jim Murray and Kristen Arcand in for Mike and Tony today. 4 o'clock hour on an agenda-free Friday means we're joined by Chris Casper, WCVB TV Channel 5. That was the final out last night. Red Sox beat the Mets. Greet the Mets. They beat them 4-2 at Citi Field. Chris, yeah. They've now won two in a row after what was a hideous week for them after they win the opener last week by 11 runs. It was one loss after another, each funnier than the next. But they win these last two games. What do you think? Your Red Sox have a little wind in their sails now? They being better as they head into the other part of New York to take on the Yankees for a weekend?
Well, first of all, I know you're watching every out of these games, right? Every inning, every out?
I will say, Chris, up until last night's game, because now real sports are back, I've watched most of these. I have been being better, and I have enjoyed each and every moment because they have been laughably funny. These games, they're just watching these terrible pitchers getting their faces kicked in, games over by the second inning. Kicking back like Seinfeld eating popcorn saying, oh, that's a shame. Oh, it's been so good. But, of course, they win these last couple of games. SOBs. So, are they back, Chris? Are they,
no,
are
they, I don't think they're back.
No?
Here's the reason why. And I, unlike you, I'm not rooting against them. I'm just saying I don't think they're back. They won three games this year, two of them Nathan Eovaldi on the mound. We know that Nathan Eovaldi can pitch. We know he's a legitimate starting pitcher. It's about the other guys. And I thought what Martin Perez gave you last night was basically what he is. He's a fifth starter, but he now is the number two starter by default. The two sweetest words in the English language, default. He pitched basically the way a number five starter would pitch, and it just happened to be good enough last night. Over the long term, do I think that will be good enough? I do not. So while it was nice that they won last night, and I'm happy that they won last night, I still have yet to see, beyond Nathan Eovaldi starting a game, a sustainable path to winning or the playoffs for the Red Sox. Now, the path to the playoffs might be lowest common denominator because there's going to be 16 teams in there, and it's sort of everybody in the playoff pool, which I hate, but I just haven't seen enough yet. And also, there's too many guys still offensively who are scuffling, whether it's Devers or Benintendi. I don't see right now a sustainable path for the Red Sox being a contender yet.
Yeah, it's been, you know, a wonky season so far. That's putting it mildly. And we knew the pitching was mostly going to suck. But they, like you mentioned, like guys that look like they just either don't want to be there or they're half-assing it. Like Benintendi looks lost at times. This is a make-or-break year for him, I feel like. Devers looks out of shape. Bogarts hadn't had that good of a start to the season. They've already sat him a couple of games.
Yeah,
like,
it's not good.
The whole thing's been a mess. But hey, all right. At least you can maybe feel a little bit better as they now take on the 4-1 Yankees this weekend. Boy, these pitching matchups. How can you not feel good about Zach Godley tonight against Masahiro Tanaka, followed by, oh, no, I'm sorry.
That's tomorrow.
Tonight's Ryan Weber against Montgomery. Tomorrow is
way better.
Zach Godley against Masahiro Tanaka. Actually, I don't even mind that because that Godley should have got the start the other night against the Mets. He goes, what, four innings, has seven strikeouts. And, of course, the Nerds had the other terrible guy go first, spots him a touchdown. Then Godley comes in. And it's like, do you people watch tape? No, well, you know, we looked at the math. And, of course, the algorithm said that Godley should have come in after. Like, oh, God, you idiots. So you got that one. You deserve to lose. So Godley, Tanaka tomorrow. And then James Paxton goes for the Yankees on Sunday against TBD. Who's that? Tom, Bob, Davidson? No, it's just...
TBD, I'll be honest with you. I have more faith in TBD than some of the names.
Right. Probably Matt Hall.
TBD out there. Hall, I got to say, that guy is a meatball artist of the highest order. He's like a left-handed Wasden.
That's just mean is what that is. All right, Chris in the car wants to talk to Chris Gasper about MLB and all the gimmicks in this shortened season. Go ahead, Chris.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. I love you guys on Saturdays. Gasper, Murray. Guys, I was thinking about gimmicks. So the worst one I started thinking about was the seventh inning, because there is a doubleheader coming now because of the corona. Those teams that have been Phillies and the Marlins or whatever, they're going to do their seven innings. So now we're going to do a softball league and, like, hey, why don't we say, you know, if you're up by 12 runs, you know, we'll cancel the game. And then finally, I was just thinking about that because that's what they should do when the Sox play the Yankees this weekend with whoever's pitching. Because when they're up 12-2, hey, we'll just cancel the game.
Mercy rule.
I don't know.
It feels that way, Chris. Thanks for the call. It feels that way on paper. Watch them win this series, like 2-1. I thought that they were going to get the bats shoved right down their throats by Jacob DeGrom the other night. Yeah. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
It's just a spite me, too. Chris in the car on Major League Baseball. Go ahead.
Hey, Chris, tremendous Simpsons reference, by the way.
Oh,
the only thing worse than watching this Red Sox pitching staff is watching how Major League Baseball is handling this breakout. I don't understand, and maybe you guys can help me, why were the Marlins, when they got three positive tests back, allowed to have a group text message to decide whether they were going to play that night? And now, all of a sudden, Major League Baseball, when the Cardinals have two positive tests, is shutting things down for the weekend. I don't understand that. If you have a plan in place, you have to have a zero-tolerance policy from the beginning in order to control everything, and now they're lying in the bed they've made. Because it's going to be ridiculous, and I will be honest with you, I'll be surprised if we get 2 more weeks of baseball.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a great point he brought up, guys. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's the most alarming thing to me. Major League Baseball, Christian, set out a 113-page set of protocols about coronavirus. And then when the Marlins had sort of a mini outbreak, something that should have been, you know, disconcerting last Sunday, it's a group text message basically saying, like, well, do we feel like playing? Do we want to play? Like, nobody stepped in and said, maybe we should postpone this, or we have to make sure there's not a larger outbreak here. And you have 113 pages. And it mean, what does it mean? Squat.
I don't understand how it was up to the players in the first place. The league can't step in and say, hey, you guys read that book we gave you? It had a whole bunch of protocols, a whole bunch of things. And right now it looks like you're at the cusp of an outbreak. It looks like things are about to go south, which they did, by the way. But the fact that they played that game on Sunday is ridiculous. I don't care if the entire team was on a group text and they all wanted to play. They shouldn't have been allowed to. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to. I look at that, first of all, the Marlins are stupid. But, I mean, really, Rob Manfred can't get anything right here. And I think that was probably the biggest botched job that you saw so far with all that. But yeah, I mean, how could you leave it up to the players? Of course the players are going to play. Unless David Price was there, but I mean, he's not a Marlin. So.
Well, I mean, how many of those players are, you know, they're none of those players are obviously, you know, epidemiologists or doctors, right? Or I don't even know the infectious disease. I don't know what they're calling it, but you know, in the NFL, they have the people who are the infectious disease officers, the people in charge of making sure you're following the protocol.
Yeah, the Vikings one got it.
I know. Yeah. I know he did. I don't mean to laugh at him, but it's just, man, that shows you how hard it is to suppress the spread of the disease. But that's the worst part to me, is that it just seemed like they had all these protocols, yet when they were faced with a little bit of a crisis, it was really an ad hoc decision made via group text that, yeah, we're just going to play.
All right, let's get to the Celtics, who start up their restarted season in a little more than an hour against the Bucks of Milwaukee. Want to know how Chris feels about the team going into tonight's game and overall in the bubble, if they can come out of the East. We'll get to that next in our long commercial-free segment here on Felger and Maz on Agenda Free Friday.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
What's the status of Kemba Walker's knee?
His knee is the strongest it's been since he got here in September. He has worked exceptionally hard over the last couple of weeks and has built up into, will play limited minutes in the first few games with the idea of building him up without, you know, hopefully no setbacks, to the point where he can play, you know, normal minutes in playoff games.
Celtics head coach Brad Stevens on a couple of days ago with Zolak and Bertrand right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, of course, simulcast as well on NBC Sports Boston. It's Felger and Maz on an agenda-free Friday. Mike and Tony out. Jim Murray, Christian Arkand in. And the final segment with Chris Gasper of WCBB, CBB Channel 5. All right, Chris, Celtics resume their season in, about a little more than an hour and a half down in Orlando against the Bucks of Milwaukee. You hear that from Brad Stevens. It's the best it's been since September, Kemba Walker's knee. So, wait, you knew when he came in that it was already screwed up? Thought there was something you can maybe read into there. They've had the 4-month layoff. Kemba Walker's knee, still an issue. Minutes restrictions. How much are you expecting out of him? How's he going to look? How's he going to factor in? That coupled with your overall feel of the Celtics and their return here, how do you think they'll come out of the East?
Yeah, starting with Kemba, I really want to see it. And I know he played in the exhibition game there against Phoenix, right? It was Phoenix.
Yep.
He didn't play in the first one against OKC.
9 minutes.
I know he played in that one, and you know, he looked okay. I just think so much of what the Celtics can do ultimately in the postseason is tied to having Kemba Walker and having him play the way he was playing earlier in the season, not the way he played from February 1st on, where he was shooting, you know, 31% from three and 33% from the field. Because even if he plays 35 minutes, if that's the production they get out of him, it's not going to be good enough. So we'll see what happens in these eight seeding games. He's on the minutes restriction. You know, look, long story short, I'll believe it when I see it. The fact the guy was off for 4 months and it was still an issue and he had that Synvisc injection, I think there's something that's structurally wrong with that knee and will remain so for the rest of his career. The question is, you know, how manageable is it? Is it something that he can just fight through and it won't be a big deal, like happens to a lot of guys later in their career? Maybe it's like an Al Horford thing, right? Horford has a bulky knee. Or is this a situation where it's like a Dustin Pedroia thing where, look, the knee's deteriorating, he's going to need like microfracture, and it turns out, you know, we've seen the best of Kemba Walker.
Yeah, so I feel like, wow, I maybe I'm the most positive one, because we did, and we answered this for an article that was posted by Sean Silver on 98.5sportsup.com. He did kind of a Celtics roundtable, like, you know, scale of 1 to 10, how freaked out are you about Kemba Walker's knee? I said I'm a 5, because I think he'll just gut it through anyway, just based on his toughness and professionalism that he's shown before down in Charlotte. So I'm a 5. Arcade over here was a hard 8, and Jimmy Stewart was the same thing back there, too. Like, they're freaked out. So where would you be if you had to put a number
7
on? Damn, you too, huh? Make me feel good. So you feel like they could potentially come out of the East, or it really does all hinge on his health?
I think it really all hinges on his health. Who knows? Maybe Marcus Smart steps up, or Gordon Hayward. I mean, they have so much talent. I think other than Milwaukee, they would be the pick. But, you know, here's the other thing. I feel like the Celtics are really boom or bust in the playoffs, and it's so hard after this layoff. We've talked about this before. So much of it is projecting, because the competitive chain of the season has been broken. You have no idea. Is Tatum going to pick up where he left off before? You don't know. What's going on with Philadelphia? They're kind of a new-look team now. Ben Simmons at the 4, Shake Milton in the starting lineup gives them a little more shooting. So if it's Celtics Sixers in the first round after this long of a layoff, like, I could see the Celtics getting bounced in the first round. I could also see them coming out of the East. I know that's kind of a cop-out, but I think it's really hard to project. I'll say that if they end up facing the Sixers in the first round, and I watch 8 seeding games where I feel like Kemba Walker is 60% of what he needs to be, then I think they'll lose in the first round.
And Arcane, you don't like the Sixers matchup either, right?
No, I hate that matchup, and it's been a bad matchup for them this year. I think that, you know, you have to sort of look at this realistically and assume that, you know, if Kemba Walker's on a minutes restriction right now, he's probably not going to be able to play every single minute that you want him to. And once that guy's out of the picture, then your starting 5 all of a sudden has Marcus Smart in it, and Brad Wanamaker's your backup point guard. And I just feel like that takes everything down a real peg. There's other teams out there that maybe don't have the same kind of starting 5. Like, I think Boston's starting 5 is better than Milwaukee's, but if someone other than Giannis goes down for the Bucks, they're deep and the Celtics aren't, and I feel like that's going to matter down there.
Chris, I want to go back to something you just said, though. You feel like the competitive chain has been broken, I think.
Yes.
Is what you said,
and yes,
with the NBA, but I don't know. Did you watch Lakers-Clippers last night?
I did. That was a great game, yeah.
I mean, it felt like they picked up right where they left off.
But those are two bona fide title contenders. That's like the best of the best from, you know, I would expect the Lakers, the Clippers, and Milwaukee to be teams that are easier to project. And remember, the Clippers didn't have Montrezl Harrell or Lou Williams there. So I understand what you're saying. And there's no Avery Bradley or Rajon Rondo for the Lakers as well. But I think those are bona fide championship contenders with arguably the two best players in the league in LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard. I think that's maybe a little easier to, like, I don't think Kawhi Leonard's going to forget how to play basketball. With Tatum, he'll be really good, but is he going to be the transcendent guy that he was before, where it's like you're starting to look at and say, oh, like, I'm going to mention Tatum in the same breath as Kawhi Leonard? He did that for like a month.
Yeah.
And that's the only time we've seen him do it in his career. I'm not knocking him for that. I'm just saying it's different when you're evaluating Kawhi or LeBron versus a younger guy who's starting to become that type of player.
I will say overall, though, that's because I didn't catch much of New Orleans, Utah, but that second game, that was fun. I forgot we were living in this horrible time for a while.
Well, like, the way the NBA set up the quarter is amazing, because you don't even feel like, I don't even feel like I'm watching a COVID game. You know what I mean? It just feels like I'm watching an NBA game.
Well, one of the things I liked that they did, so in watching some of the Celtics scrimmages, I didn't like the court. Like, I wish the out of bounds was colored, and Maz has said the same thing too, but now I get what they're doing. Like, they've superimposed logos and ads and things on those areas. So that wasn't clear to me first. It just looked too plain. But overall, from an aesthetic standpoint, I think it looks great. I love the product. Arthur and Redding on Celtics expectations as they start up tonight against Milwaukee. Go ahead, Arthur.
Yes, guys. Wow, what a great show you have. Jim, you got a fabulous voice. You ought to have your own show or be with the networks. Chris, I want to ask you something. I was going to mention about how I thought Bill Russell was the greatest basketball player of all time. But about a year ago, Bob Ryan, in one of his columns, said that our coach Stevens, Brad Stevens, was Red Auerbach's nephew, or excuse me, grandson, or great-grandson. Did you ever hear of anything like that?
No. Are you saying he meant it literally?
Well, I think so. It didn't come off as a joke, and it was, you know, and I just thought, well, you know, that could have happened because Stevens always wanted to stay in college and to get a chance to coach the Celtics if, in fact, he was Red Auerbach's grandson or great-grandson. It wasn't a tongue-in-cheek, but I've never heard anyone else ever talk about it. Have you?
Maybe, I don't know.
No, I have a feeling that maybe that was, you know, Bob sort of making a reference to the idea of sort of like, you know.
From a theoretical standpoint.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's you know, it's sort of more like, you know, an analogy sort of deal.
Or maybe this whole time in the NBA, there's been like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's like 6 degrees of Brad Stevens or 6 degrees of Red Auerbach. Like everyone somehow knew him or was related. And Arthur just figured the whole damn thing out. How about that? Let's go to Nick and Lincoln on the NBA bubble. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Good. I just wanted to applaud the NBA. I think you know, Adam Silver is the best commissioner in the four major sports. NBA has always had the best commissioner. And the policies and protocol that they have in place apparently are clear. They're being adhered to. Enforcement, probably not the best word these days, but hopefully you get my point. The clear expectations, communication, and zero positive tests say a lot for what they are doing. I applaud them, and I hope the NFL takes note because Roger Goodell could really do his reputation a favor if he gets this one right. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Nick. Can I just defend quickly? I mean, I just want to defend MLB here because I think that's the easiest juxtaposition right now, MLB, NBA, and it looks like one's a train wreck and the other one got it right. In fairness to MLB, they did want to put the players in a bubble. I don't know if you remember this. And the players didn't want to do it. And I'm not even criticizing the players because I wouldn't want to be away from my family for 5 or 6 months either. But remember guys like Chris Sale and Mike Trout spoke up. They said they didn't want to do it. So MLB acquiesced to the players and said, we won't do the bubble thing. A lot of people are ripping MLB for not having a bubble. That wasn't MLB. That was the players. The players didn't want to do it. And I'm not even ripping the players for it. Now, again, I feel like MLB and the players, they're never on the same page, and the agreements they end up working out usually don't work out for them in the long run, for the sport in the long run. I think this is another example of that.
Squeeze in one more call before we say goodbye to Chris Gasper until tomorrow morning on Gasper and Murray. Michael in Medford with the Patriots talk. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, the Patriots' success was due because of the Brady-Belichick era, and Brady's gone. If Belichick gets tested positive, does Belichick coach from a remote area instead of giving the reins to Josh? Because we know he doesn't want to relinquish any power at all. So that was my question.
Oh, there's no, Michael, I can't imagine there's any shot like that. You know, what, Belichick's going to be home?
make sure it's covered too. On
like, no, like you're out. Like if you have it, you're out. We'll quarantine. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. You hand over the reins to the son.
I don't know. I mean, I know that's the way it goes. And I know Ben Volen's pointing this out. Like he can't do anything, but I could see him at home on his cell phone. What kind of cell phone do you think he has? Do you think he has like a Motorola, like a flip phone?
Old BlackBerry or something.
Yeah, I could see
razor,
him on his,
like, razor.
I could see him on his flip phone dialing Ernie Adams up in the booth, and Ernie has the direct line to Josh McDaniels, and they could work it out that way. I don't know. I don't know. I could see that working. Speaking of MLB, Christian, I don't know if you see this.
Yeah. But, saw this. Yeah. This is a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Oh. I could save it for the headlines here. But,
I wasn't going to say anything.
Even I don't know what it is. So we'll get caught up with this big deal in MLB with the Sports Up headlines with Christian Arcand as we bid adieu to Chris Gasper.
Later,
WCVB
Gasper. See you later, man.
TV Channel 5. See you tomorrow at 11, Chris. We get that extra hour back, buddy. Oh, I'm so pumped. Gasper Murray tomorrow at 11.
And the Sports Hub Celtics show from noon to 1.
Returns at noon as there are actual Celtics games to talk about, or a game, as they start up in just about an hour here on the Sports Hub. All right, big news of Bruin and MLB. Arcan's going to get you caught up here. And then we'll get into the final hour of an agenda-free Friday with your phone calls at 617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.